call the meeting to order. Thank you, everybody, for being here today. As usual, we do have a full agenda of one big bill by Representative Abler, so we'll need our time here. And to let you know, a quorum is present, and we'll be able to take action then on the minutes. And would somebody like to move the minutes? Representative Schumacher?
Yes.
Wonderful. Representative Schumacher moves the minutes. I hope that's okay, Representative Liebling. I don't want to take anything away from you.
I just want to make sure he studied them.
I'm sure he has. Thank you very much. All right. Any other discussion on the minutes? Seeing none, we'll proceed to a vote. All those in favor of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the minutes are adopted. Thank you, members. And so we have a bill in front of us today that is... Okay. House File 2294, Representative Abler, Chairman Abler. How would you like to proceed? Do you have an amendment you want us to take action on? Anything at all here?
We're not going to make any motions today. This is just a presentation. It's pretty hot. And so I think everybody's had a chance to see the draft. And it seemed like it would be good if the staff would go through the different sections. I'll just give a few comments and then let them go through. And then maybe when we go through the spreadsheet, Mr. Berg can make the corrections. It's just a so hot here with the sound. Does that seem right to the audience? Is that all right? Just seems loud to me. Maybe it's not sleeping. It seems echoey. None of us slept much. We argued all night last night, pretty much. Anyway, so this is...
I fully understand what you're saying.
Did you have a little bill last night? Anyway, so this is to help...
I'm so sorry to interrupt you again, but the spreadsheets are not here.
Okay.
As I understand it, Mr. Chung, or is there... They're still down and duplicating.
Okay.
I didn't want you to get to going and members didn't have it here, or just wanted to give you that information, so how you want to proceed is up to you.
Well, what I'll do is I'll just give a few introductory comments, and we can just talk about the policy matters. If you weren't paying attention, last year we had a little deficit, and we left this committee about a year ago with $1.863 billion in reductions, which is a level no one's ever done. And it went through process and got about cut in half. And you know the outcome of that. There were a few clinkers in that, which we're trying to help out with. This year's budget, the 1.863000, we'll be discussing the last zero in that. That's the scope of this bill. And so there is no general fund appropriation to us. And so we are trying to find some savings in doing things a bit differently. There are no... cuts that I would call cuts in here. There's managements. The forced bed closure issue goes away in this bill. There is no 1.67 contingent rate cut in our fix here until 2014. We push that out a year. Hopefully, they'll be well resolved by then. We do a little bit of funding, which we'll go over. I was unable to find any way to deal with the 10%. Reduction to low needs, except to try to equalize it a bit, which will be in an amendment tomorrow. Those are things, and the PCA matter has taken care of itself, at least temporarily, with the court injunction. That's all put off until January 1st of 2013, which is beyond my horizon on this bill. I don't have any money to repair it. With all respect to the governor, with whom I have a good rapport, he brought out a proposal that we heard it yesterday, I think it was, in committee. Was it only yesterday? It was on, I think it was unveiled last week, where he spent $26 million of monies to solve some of the issues I would like to solve. However, the money that he provided for that, the source, is foreign operator corporation tax increases, which, if you've been keeping track of the bill we're doing tonight, is somewhat controversial and may not likely become law. And so he's in the same position I am in finding real money to solve the problems that we have in front of us. I believe the monies I brought forward are, for the most part, substantive and genuine. And there's work to be done in the monies that I work to refocus. But it's all small denominations. We do some we do some work in child care with TANF, which I think is an appropriate use of that. I will talk about that. And so so you'll see a lot of small fixes in here. And I think if this bill can go forward in the general direction it's going, a lot of the issues that people are concerned about, at least in by number, like the numerous amounts of them, will actually be improved. There are some matters that are structural and a challenge that will continue to be a challenge to the next budget cycle as well, and I'm a little nervous about that one. But that's not today. That's a year from now, Madam Chair. So with that introduction, oh, by the way, and the language that you see, as is the first draft of an omnibus, has all kinds of glitches in it. The amendments that you'll see posted, especially the author's amendment, there's a technical one, there'll be a more complete one, which will show the changes I'm bringing forward. I expect to see a bevy of amendments brought forward by people in the room and by members on both sides of the aisle, and those will be discussed in detail tomorrow. And so just to remind people, if I'm going to be going over this for half an hour or so with staff, and then we'll do testimony. If testimony is needed to go beyond today, I think some of the people here every day were asked to move to tomorrow. People have to travel. We don't want to put them in inconvenience. That'll be that. And I, by the way, I have two bills up in civil law in about 45 minutes. And so if I leave, it's not meant to be disrespectful. I've asked, I'll ask my CA, Ms. Keel and Mr. Lear to take good notes on some of the salient parts. They've been up to their neck with these elements. And I know a lot of what you're going to say, but there's something I don't know you're going to say. If you think I need to hear it personally, I'll stay here all night until we get those visits done. We'll be on the floor for a long time today, so my door is always open. This bill will be open to be improved all the way until we get to conference, which I fully expect we'll have one and come out with a bill the governor will sign. So with that, Madam Chair, I think you can just have the various staff individuals go through the policy. Okay, let's go through. Well, if there's a spreadsheet better, Mr. Burke, let's do that since the people haven't got those yet. Let's just go through the policy. That'll be more efficient. And starting with Article 1 and whoever has that one.
Mr. Chung?
Sure. Okay. Madam Chair and members, Article 1 is the health care article. Section 1 deals with MA billing by licensed physician assistants, and it allows them to directly bill for certain mental health services that are provided in an inpatient hospital setting. Section 2 is related to that. It specifies that the MA payment rate for physician assistants will be 65% of the rate paid to doctoral paid professionals. Section 3 provides MA coverage for community paramedic services. It defines the eligible recipient, and it also sets up criteria for billing as part of a care plan. Section 4 eliminates the $3 MA copayment for eyeglasses. It also eliminates the requirement that MA recipients pay a family deductible. Section 5 requires the commissioner to implement a pediatric care coordination service for children with high-cost mental health or medical conditions. Section 6 would require managed care plans and county-based plans to report to the commissioner on the extent to which they use patient-centered decision-making tools and procedures and how they encourage their use within the plan. Section 7 requires the commissioner to require managed care and county-based purchasing plans to implement strategies to reduce the incidence of low birth weight in certain geographic areas and to coordinate these services with the social services and the local public health system. Section 8 deals with competitive bidding for the PMAP program, and it basically makes the current two-year demonstration project ongoing, beginning January 1 of 2014. Section 9 eliminates the family deductible for the Minnesota Care program. Section 10 requires DHS to develop and provide to the legislature a methodology and draft legislation that would allow the release of summary data on claims for MA and Minnesota Care Enrollees to research institutions. And Section 11 requires DHS to convene a group of stakeholders to assist the commissioner in developing recommendations to allow physician assistants to bill for outpatient mental health services.
Madam Chair and members, Article 2 starts on page 8 of the bill. That's the provisions related to the health department. Sections 1, 2, 3, and 9 of that article are the sections that transfer regulation of HMOs from the Commissioner of Health to the Commissioner of Commerce, which we heard yesterday. Section 4 of the bill was amended since it was in committee. This permits providers to charge a $10 retrieval fee, but not the per-page copying fee for copies of health records requested by patients that are appealing a Social Security benefits denial. Section 5 is the patient consent for a modification to the patient consent for release of records, limiting the representation to medical emergencies. Section 6 is the requirement on hospitals that they provide certain information through the Leapfrog group. Section 7 is an evaluation. Well, it's a continuation of something that passed last year and related to the health department and the Commissioner of Human Services kind of consolidating or reorganizing their regulatory responsibilities. And this requires them to provide certain information on their websites and also to contract with MMB to evaluate and make recommendations on whether or not to further reorganize the regulatory functions. Okay. Section 8 is the study for for-profit HMOs. And then again, Section 9 is from the HMO bill yesterday.
Okay, I have a question on this article, Representative Huntley.
Madam Chair, and to the our staff people, I'm interested in the shifting of control from Minnesota Department of Health, which I understand. I mean, I don't have a question about that issue, but my question is relates to taking regulatory functions from the Department of Human Services on medical assistance and taking those to the Commerce Department. So who will be in charge of medical assistance if this bill passes and that control of MA is shifted to Commerce?
Mr. Chairman?
I thought that was our intent. Is that what I was distracted? I'm sorry. Is that the whole health to commerce piece?
Section 9, Representative Huntley, is it, or is it a specific section or page to help?
It would be well, someplace in here it says the DHS regulation is also being shifted to
page 12, line 5.
Madam Chair, Representative Huntley, I think you'll see an amendment to change this section around a little bit by tomorrow, so maybe that question is better for tomorrow after you see what might change.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Representative Huntley, good go for now?
That's right.
Okay. All right, good. Mr. Chair?
I'll look forward to that, Madam Chair.
All right, wonderful, wonderful. Okay, we can continue. I think, Ms. Pinelli, you are doing the Article 3 now.
Yes, Madam Chair. Article 3, the Children and Family Services article, starts on page 12. Section 1 modifies the child care assistance provider rate differential. It modifies the list of organizations that are included under the rate differential. Section 2 modifies the child care assistance absent day policy and allows for 25 full absent days. This is basically going back to what was the policy prior to changes that were made last year. Sections 3, 4, 5, and 6 of the bill are related to the EBT cards and making modifications to those cards. I'll just note that Section 5 restricts the use of the cash portion of those cards to Minnesota and surrounding states, and Section 6 provides for the disqualification of people found to be using the cards improperly. It's a one-year disqualification after the first offense, 2 years after the second offense, and then permanently after the third offense. Section 7 of the bill relates to general assistance earned income savings accounts, and it just increases the amount of money that can be in one of those accounts. Sections 8 and 9 are related to the Family Assets for Independence program, and it's reinstating language allowing for state or TANF funds to be used for that program. Section 10 modifies the grant authority for the early childhood facilities grants. It places a limit on the number of grant funds that can be used in the metro area. It basically directs 80% of the grant funds to be distributed to facilities that are located outside of the seven-county metro area. Section 11 relates to group residential housing supplementary service rates, and it requires the providers to make referrals to available community services for volunteer and employment opportunities for residents. Section 12 is also related to GRH, and this provides for a supplementary service rate for a certain facility. Section 13 relates to the MFIP program. It modifies a section of statute that deals with persons convicted of a drug offense. It basically changes the look-back period. Right now, the look-back period for a felony-level drug offense goes all the way back to July 1st of 1997, which is when the MFIT program was first implemented, and this changes that to a look-back of 10 years. It requires assistance to be vendor-paid for persons that have a felony drug conviction. And then it modifies the definition of drug offense. This is on page 21, lines 5 to 12. It adds an additional felony drug offense. It's on line 21.8. The reference is to section 152.137, which deals with the manufacture of methamphetamine in the presence of a minor or a vulnerable adult. Section 14 is also related to MFIP, and this says that if the county knows that a unit in which an MFIP assistance unit is living in has been deemed uninhabitable, the county shall notify the landlord and not vendor pay rent to that landlord until the landlord can demonstrate that the premises are fit for the intended use. Section 15 creates a grant program to promote healthy community initiatives. Section 16 provides for circles of support grants, and Section 17 is a reviser's instruction instructing the reviser to modify terms in statute, and this is related to the EBT cards so that terms in statute are consistent.
Okay, Ms. Pinelli. Members, were there any questions on that article? Okay, Ms. Pinelli, if you go ahead to Article 4.
Okay, Madam Chair and members, Article 4 is the continuing care article. And Section 1 starts on page 23, and this modifies a long-term care report. It adds more people that the commissioners of Health and Human Services need to consult with in doing the report, and it adds looking at long-term care services and supports for the elderly and also children and adults with disabilities to the report. Section 2 is related to the foster care licensing moratorium, and this requires a resource needs determination process managed at the state level to look at capacity and figure out where there might be extra beds and where there might need to be more, and it requires a report as part of a component on the report that we just talked about, the status of long-term care services. Section 3 modifies the TEFRA contribution amount. There was a temporary increase in the parental fee that was required that was implemented on July 1st of 2010, and this just makes that temporary change permanent. Section 4 starts on page 30. This is related to state agency hearings, and it limits the scope of hearings involving appeals related to the PCA program to the specific issues that are under written appeal. Sections 5 and 6 are related to the MAEPD program, and this is allowing for people to continue on the program beyond their 65th birthday, and it's also disregarding certain income and assets. Section 7 is another section that's related to the PCA appeals, and it's basically just saying that a person that's adversely affected by a decision and wants to appeal needs to do that in plain language, and that the reduction, suspension, denial, or termination of services needs to be given to the person in plain language. Section 8 is related to assessment and support planning for the elderly waiver program, and this is just allowing for input from the person's provider of services. Section 9 is related to the mandatory consultation for housing with services. It provides for some exemptions to that. Section 10 is related to elderly waiver customized living service rates, and this allows for some input from the provider of services to ensure that there's a documented need for services. And then it also says that EW participants that are receiving customized living services must have a private bedroom unless they choose to share a bedroom with no more than one other family member, with certain exceptions. Section 11 is service rate limits. This is related to the elderly waiver program, and it's requiring the commissioner to develop proposals for alternative or enhanced service payment rate systems, and to try to create criteria to designate certain areas as critical access home and community-based service areas. Section 12 relates to elderly waiver, and this is just another section that goes along with allowing input from the provider of customized living services. And then the same language, limiting number of people that can share a room, is also included. Section 13 relates to screening teams for the DD waiver, and this is also allowing for input from the current or proposed provider of services during the screening process. Section 14, assessment and reassessment. This relates to the CAT, CADI, and TBI waivers, and it also allows for input from the provider during the assessment and reassessment process. Section 15, individualized service plan. This relates to the changes to the corporate foster care licensing moratorium. It removes some language that was included in the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill last year about reducing capacity when certain waiver clients move out of a corporate foster care setting. Section 16 relates to CADI setting and size size and location requirements, and it's basically just requiring the commissioner to seek federal approval for a waiver to eliminate the setting size and location requirements that are currently in the CADI waiver plan. Section 17, home and community-based settings, this just sets out a definition and criteria for what constitutes a home and community-based setting. Section 18 directs the commissioner to develop the community first choice option. Sections 19, 20, and 21 are all related to the MAEPD change, allowing for people that are over age 65 to continue in that program. And then Section 22, the repealer, repeals the 1.67 contingent rate cuts for continuing care providers.
Madam Chair.
All right, Mr. Chairman.
Just to call attention just to the substance of the continuing care piece in this omnibus compared to the past. And it, most time it's been health care and related things. I think that it's noteworthy to notice the attention to continuing care in this and both cleaning up some of the challenges and encouraging further ways to help people get the most out of their services in this. The health care article, if you notice, was only a few pages long. It was kind of a gentle person's agreement to kind of keep the pressure off the health side because they did so much last time while they try to get that all back together. And I think in the continuing care, we waited in and now we're trying to continue with that work. So I think that's, even for a number of pages, I think it's interesting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Who's presenting the next? Ms. Cleveland? Okay.
Madam Chair and members, Article 5 starts on page 50 of the bill. This is the miscellaneous article. Section 1 relates to civil commitments, providing that Rule 25 assessment does not need to be completed for individuals who are civilly committed in order for the county to assess consolidated chemical dependency treatment funds. Section 2 is related to certain information on felony drug convictions. It requires the court administrator to send reports to the Commissioner of Human Services every 6 months. And sections 3 and 4 are related to data sharing between the Commissioner of Public Safety and Department of Human Services related to individuals that hold multiple identification cards and also to the legal presence status of certain individuals. Section 5 allows the public authority to stop collecting child care support if either party informs the public authority that no child care costs are being incurred. Section 6 is a change to last year's laws related to the White Earth Band of Ojibwe Human Services Project. It provides that when health care costs are assumed by the Indian Health Service, then the first $500,000 is in the state tribal health cost is distributed to the White Earth Band and provides that the remainder is then distributed to the band in supplemental services to off-reservation members. Section 7 is a foster care provision for individuals with autism and instructs the Commissioner of Human Services to work with counties that agree to develop licensed foster care homes for people with autism. Section 8 directs the Commissioner of Human Services to develop an optional certification for providers who demonstrate competency in working with individuals with autism. Section 9 instructs the Commissioner of Human Services to work with stakeholders and counties to develop a plan for more efficiency and effectively provide CD services. Section 10 is a direction to the Commissioner of Human Services in consultation with the Commissioner of Public Safety to issue a report to the legislature implementing provisions from 256.01. And Section 11 is the Minnesota Special Health Services provision related to Wilmer, and it instructs the Commissioner to manage departmental resources to achieve savings so that Wilmer's site can remain open until July 1st of 2013.
All right, that concludes Article 5. John Locks, are you gonna? Okay.
The sheet has been passed out, and is that what you want to use with this as well? So,
yes,
Berg,
Madam.
Are you going to do this?
Yes, okay. Madam Chair, members, it's probably easier to go through the spreadsheet than actually go through the numbers in Article 6. Members should have a legal-sized document spreadsheet titled Health and Human Services Net Fiscal Impact Proposals. I'll just note page 1 is the summary numbers. If you look to the right, you'll see House recommendations. On line 8, I'll draw your attention to the net general fund fiscal impact of this bill, the DE2 amendment as it stands, is zero. If you go to line 11, you'll see that there is spending of $1,533,000 in TANF funds in this bill. Going down to line 39, you'll see that the net general fund impact of the Human Services Department is a negative $523,000. And then on line 48, you'll see that the net general fund impact of the Department of Health is a positive $523,000. All the TANF spending occurs in programs at Department of Human Services. Moving on to page 2, the specific items. At the top of page 2 on line 90, there is $150,000 that is in a rider that is language that was from the department on the elderly waiver critical access language the chairman has put in. At the bottom of page 2 on line 111, there is $1.5 million for the nursing home construction moratorium exception bill that we heard, Representative Schumacher's bill. Moving on to page 3, the top item on line 115 is the House's MAEPD fix. Moving on to line 123 is the repeal of the contingent 1.67% provider cut that was referenced. And the item directly below that, starting on line 132, indicates that there will be a shift of the amount of the cut that won't happen. There's a spending line above for the repeal of that. There will be a shift of up to the amount needed in fiscal 13 that will then bring the change to zero as in fiscal 13, as though there were no cut and no change to the general fund. At the bottom of page 3 on line 149 is the money necessary to implement the EBT card reforms that were referenced. On page 4 on line 54 is the implementation money for the GA earned income disregard language. That's the language of the underlying bill we're amending. On line 159 is the House's program to manage reduction in corporate foster care capacity that will save, in this current draft, $3.871 million in 13. The language assumes that savings. On line 164 is the Teen Challenge bill that we had heard earlier in the year. And at the bottom of page 4 is, you'll just see is the Wilmer CBHH, and as Ms. Cleveland referenced, there's language in the bill that directs the department to keep it open for a year and to manage their resources to do so. On page 5, there are no new programs. Page 6 is the next set of items. On line 198 is the return on it on taxpayer investment program that the chairman carried that bill. That's a appropriation of the Commissioner of Human Services for a grant to the Commissioner of Management and Budget for the ROTI study. On beginning the TANF, no, excuse me, one, I think that line should be wrong. No, that. On line 203, there's a very small programming cost to implement the child support modification language that is in the bill. And then TANF expenditures begin on line 207 with the Healthy Communities Initiative, line 211, the Circles of Support Initiative, and line 215, the Northern Connections Initiative. Those are all part of Representative Lanning's Circles of Support bill, mm-hmm. and those expenditures are TANF expenditures in this bill. And then on page 7, there is at the top on line 219 is the FAME program, Representative Bannion's bill. That is also a TANF appropriation. Line 223 is a buyback of the child care assistance absent days that were reduced last year, and that is paid for with TANF dollars. Line 228 is Representative Lohmer's bill on intractable epilepsy, and that's a general fund appropriation. Line 232 is an appropriation to Advocating Change Together, and I believe the rest of the appropriations are Ms. Adrian's will describe in the Department of Health.
Madam Chair and members, the Department of Health appropriations start on page 8 on line 247 is the governor's initiative. And then on line 251, this is the Aliveness Project. It's a statewide nonprofit that provides health and wellness services. And that's $100,000 in the current biennium. The next line is an evaluation that MMB will do of all of the regulatory functions that are performed by the Department of Health and Health and Human Services. On the next line, it's a study on the for-profit HMOs. That's a one-time cost of $79,000. And then the nursing home moratorium exception that was referenced under the DHS appropriations, there's a portion of an administrative cost that the Department of Health picks up, and this is $8,000 in the current biennium. And then on line 267, this is another one-time cost. The Department of Health will partner with the University of Minnesota to do an autism study. And this is not reflected in the language just yet, but this will be one of the author's amendments that will appear tomorrow. So we just wanted to reflect it in the spreadsheet as well.
Thank you, Ms. Adrian. Mr. Chairman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just want to point out a few things that are already known to be different in the spreadsheet. I'll just walk through a few things. And Representative Huntley knows how this game goes. Stuff made sense last week, and it doesn't work this week. But I think you'll find our assumptions are reasonable. And some are just technical. The nursing home moratorium on are these lines the same on the new sheet?
No.
Probably not. Okay. In the same order, though, right? Are they in the same order?
Yes.
Okay. So the nursing home moratorium exception, that's actually next biennium. But they can start doing the work now, and it's meant to not cancel. And this really generates a lot of money. And I don't know the math. Maybe one of the testifiers can tell us what $1.5 million generates. It's like pretty close to a bazillion. It's a factor. Let me just talk about the continuing care, the 1.67% reduction. And the payment delay. The department is still working at high speed to get this waiver to be approved. This has the unique element of a proposal that was passed by a DFL House and Republican governor and ratified by a GOP House and a Democratic governor. And so it's you can't get much more agreement than that. And the governor wrote a letter to all 10 of our congressional Senate people to urge them to help. Commissioner Justin is going out to Washington, I was told yesterday, to try to get this to go. And so the only challenge is that it's delayed. And since we're a little light on cash, my solution to this the bill pushes back the contingent rate cut to 2014. Or fiscal to July 1st of 2013, which is the next fiscal year. So if the waiver should fail, then it will take effect a year and 3 months from now. If it's obtained by May 1st, it can be implemented to no cost to us and all the savings will be realized. Every month after May 1st that it's obtained, it's about a $2 million cost. It's about a $22 million cost in this next year. And so in the bill is language that we pay about $100 million a month out to these providers, state cost. And so $2 million a month sounds like a smaller number. It just sounds like a manageable number. And so my suggestion is that we delay the June 2013 payment by whatever increment we need, $2, $4, $6 million out of 100, and then pay it back July 1st, at least to account for this occurring. I think there's nobody in this room who wants this to happen, and so I see this as a reasonable way. And so you can call it a shift. I think payment delay is more appropriate than compared to some shifts we do in the past where we shift to avoid making a cut to put off till tomorrow what we should have done today. We did in 2009 what we wished we could have done yesterday. So this is a different sort of an item on that. And so otherwise I have no other delays or shifts or anything in this bill. So that's just that part. And that can be discussed later. And by the way, in the spreadsheet you have, it shows that we repeal it. And that runs my tails up pretty high. And so the improved spreadsheet will show a $22 million only cost and savings in 2013 and nothing in 2014, because that'll still be existing then. But that's next legislature's problem. The TEFRA, if anybody wonders, that's exactly the same rates that we were paying currently. It was in last year's bill and somehow just fell off. There's no new impact on anybody. The teen challenge is in the tails. Let's see. Oh, and Merck, that's something that's there's $1 million in 2013, and then there's tails for $1 million. The governor had six. So we're trying. We're trying to at least give respect for that. The House had a position that was very strong on Merck leaving, and this is our show. We're still strong on it, so that's the best we can do for now. And the modification of the corporate foster care capacity, this is the A3 amendment on some kind of growth hormone that Ms. Henry brought forward, where the department can manage in a much more sensible way. That in concert with the 25% capacity allowance at apartments, et cetera, we think the department believes they can save some money in this, and so that's going to be a discussion that will come up a bit more. I really appreciate the department's help on this. And I don't know, so that's that. Let's see. Too many spreadsheets. And it's my intention, this was the Morrow bill about the MAEPD. The governor came forward yesterday with a much superior version, which costs more, but I think is really the way to go. It can happen in April retroactive, so all the people who testified that are still vulnerable to being kicked off wouldn't be. And it allows a $20,000 asset allowance. Plus, I thought, why are they losing their condo? It's because housing doesn't count as an asset. But their income is too low to make the payments. And so perhaps now with this going forward, they can actually keep making their condo payments or their housing. So I think that this is a pretty high priority for our whole committee. I think that's almost everything. Oh, and just to tell you what's on my mind for later, the governor brought forward jogged our memory about the Essential Community Support Program when the waiver does go through. I think we need to find a way to do that. I haven't got the money to do it right now, but that's something that we need to find a way just to keep on our mind that it's almost $1 million, which is a scary number given the target I have to spend. So I think, Madam Chair, that's the major changes that are reflected. Did Mr. Berg, did I hit all the major things? Okay. And so I'll stand for questions, and then in a few minutes I'll excuse myself, and then we can take testimony, Madam Chair. So if any members have questions, this is a good time for that.
Yeah, we do, Mr. Chairman. We have Representative Huntley, first one here.
Well, Madam Chair, I think this is for Mr. Berg.
Okay,
Mr. And this is just one clarification. I have, obviously, I have trouble with reading some spreadsheets, but I'm trying to understand the federal TANF balance on page 1. And it looks to me like you're adding money to the balance, and I thought we were spending money.
Mr. Byrd.
Madam Chair, Representative Huntley, I will give you a finder's fee for that. I noticed that yesterday. I got a call from the technical guy at the department this morning who said, It looks to us like the formula there is adding rather than subtracting, and you're right, it is that 17-8 should be then reduced by 1533 to get to a different number down there. This is a spreadsheet that came over. I saw it yesterday. I just didn't have time to fix it. So, yes, I'm amazed you found it.
Very good, Representative Huntley. Sharp as a tack. Did you have any?
I thought I was just confused.
You were. Isn't that nice? You were just right. Did you have anything else, Representative Huntley?
No, that's fine.
Oh, wonderful. Representative Liebling.
Well, thanks, Madam Chair. I didn't know I was going to have to follow that. Representative Abler, you said that there was some money for Merck, and I'm looking at the spreadsheet, and I'm not seeing it on line 169. It's the partial restoration of the Merck funding, and the governor's got the 6.404 here, and your line says zero.
Oh, Madam Chair, mm-hmm. Mr. Bird, look at the right person who's in charge. That'll be an amendment for tomorrow. I just wanted to tell you that it's coming. And so I have two spreadsheets, and one is from noon, which is real, and we have yesterday's, which is way out of date already. So thank you for catching in.
Oh, good. So thank you, Madam Chair. I'm on the
show. Well, we are on a roll.
Okay, next. Representative else.
Yeah, find some more mistakes. That'd be good.
Okay, Mr. Berg, would you say that for the committee?
Madam Chair and members, just so to be clear, the spreadsheet you have reflects the DE2 amendment, which is in front of you right now. The chair described some changes that he intends to make, but you don't have those. But the spreadsheet reflects what's in the language in front of you today.
But it doesn't reflect is the line for the chairman that's in his mind?
Right.
Yes, Madam
okay.
Chair.
All right, we'll kind of just fill it in. Representative Abler. All right. Okay, Representative Liebling, are you all right? Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Well, yeah, I had the same question as Representative Huntley.
Yeah.
I have the freshman talking. You're rubbing off. No, I'm not that astute. No, my question was, I read recently in House research that the Merck money in past was funded by three ways, PMAP and some tobacco money as well. I always like the fact if we can earmark a certain tax or a certain fund, certain dollars that is collected by the consumer and use it for the greater good of Minnesota. So I'm wondering, Mr. Chairman, if in restoring some of the Merck money, are we able to earmark a certain tax? In the past, it was a tobacco tax of several million dollars that's already existing. I'm not advocating increasing any taxes, but what's existing now. Is that still possible? Are we doing it that way, or is it that gone away of the dodo bird?
Mr. Chairman.
Actually, I might defer to Representative Huntley on that question, but if we raise a tax, we can spend it however we want. And so the question is, if we want to get a federal match on some things, we have to follow some very complicated rules. Merck is one of those kinds of projects. I tried to reform it last year. All I got was a headache. It's very complicated, and we tried to focus, and we wound up with it being much the same in terms of the formula. But if that's your question, we sort of can, but the feds help us make up our minds sometimes.
Representative McDonald.
Madam Chairman, thank you for giving me the opportunity to state on record I'm not advocating raising any additional taxes, but I know that actually I spoke to Representative Huntley on the floor yesterday and asked him that very question. He was familiar with it to a point, but is that not the case? Are we able to fund Merck or any other program, but I'll leave it to Merck, with that's the existing tax collected from the tobacco?
Mr. Chairman?
Tax.
Maybe Representative Huntley would yield to that question and offer some insight.
Representative Huntley?
Well, it's my understanding that the current formula that we're using is all based on medical assistance rates at certain institutions. And if we do make the Merck payments out of that, then the feds give us 50%. So we're paying for every dollar that we pay out of medical assistance for Merck, the feds will pay another dollar. If we took the money from some other tax that's unrelated to medical assistance directly, then we won't get federal matching.
Thank you, Representative Huntley. And Representative McDonald, in regards to tax issues, if you're going to do anything with taxes, that's purview of the tax committee. We don't have the authority to do to that extent. And Mr. Berg, if there's anything more, you can weigh in on that.
Madam Chair, I don't know. Possibly it will be helpful in this. The chair's description of putting $1 million into Merck is a general fund expenditure to replace some monies that were removed from Merck last year. So the description here is not about changing a distribution of other taxes. It's talking about making a general fund appropriation. Yeah. So.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Berg. Representative McDonald, does that kind of help muddy the waters or clarify?
Clear's mud.
All right. All right.
No, very clear. Thank you.
All right. Good, good. Representative Liebling?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I think it's a really good question, Representative McDonald, whether it's in this committee or not, because, you know, our business here is to try to fund health and human services, and this is a really important thing to fund. And I guess this is really a complicated formula, and Merck is, how it's funded and how the money's distributed has been the subject of a lot of consternation and headaches and work, and you know, someday maybe we'll all get this straightened out. Probably not, but but the question, though, I think is a really good question. I mean, right now I think it's a what they call a carve out from PMAP, so part of the money that's going to our public programs, which is the MA money that's half federal, is being carved out to go to this, if I'm saying that correctly. But I also would like to have the question answered, since you raised it, about whether in the past some of the money has come from some other sources. And I just wonder if any of the staff can answer that, because, you know, maybe Mr. Chun remembers, or I don't know if only the fiscal staff would know that, but I think it's a really good question.
Yeah, and good news, Ms. Cleveland is going to be able to weigh in on this.
Madam Chair and Representative Liebling, sorry, my back is to you. There has been in the past funding, and in fact, there is still some that comes out of the tax, cigarette tax. I can't remember the dollar amount, a few million. The majority of it comes out of the PMAP. And then there's also some transfers that happen from the University of Minnesota. It's kind of a borrowing of money from them. They get paid back. So that also gets matched, and that's related to the PMAP carve-out. So I think the answer to your question is yes, there has been other sources.
Thank you, Ms. Cleveland. Representative Liebling, Mr. Chairman, do you need
to? I have 10 minutes. So.
Oh, okay. So all right. Just
questions.
In case
maybe
you had
questions
to leave.
To me would be appropriate. And then
all right. Yeah. Yes. Just Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Manager. Just quickly, I was just going to say, if Ms. Cleveland has any kind of a quick handout, I know there exists a lot of different things. It'd be great if we could get that maybe. Representative McDonald would like that, too. I think it's a really important topic. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Liebling and Ms. Cleveland. Maybe we could just send it out to the whole committee membership. All right. Thank you very much. Anybody else with questions for the chairman?
Madam Chair, while you wait for those, let me just offer a summary of something that was a great concern to many people in the room. Mm-hmm. On the welfare reform part, this committee and the reform committee and other committees discussed many things on the topic. What's carried in this bill are actually several elements. The EBT cards in five states, for the cash portion, food can be spent anywhere, that's a federal law. The drug convictions, if they're convicted of a felony, we added one that was meth related, which seemed like a good one to add on. Meth, I think it was meth and a child or something, it was some really bad thing. And so those folks still get the money, but it's vendor paid. And if they also if they fail the they violate the EBT the use for alcohol and tobacco, three strikes you're out. And then there's some language from Senator Roskowski about the data sharing that's in here. So public safety is going to share with DHS their license work, where they find fraudulent licenses, where that one person may have eight licenses or multiple licenses. That'll be given to DHS to see if those people are getting public programs under perhaps multiple names, at which point they'll be turned over to either their internal work or the counties to investigate that. And that'll be given the normal due process of their normal investigations with all the safety safeguards and, you know, process that's there. And I think that, oh, and then the courts are going to report felony drug convictions as well. I think that's, is that all the things? Oh, and then also the slumlords can't get the rent money. I think the language was cleaned up a little bit from legal aid. And thanks to their help on some of these matters, and thanks to the objections of some people, some things just didn't go forward, which I'm comfortable with some of that. But if you're a slumlord, they can quit paying the vendor pay, and the people can't get kicked out. So that's the summary of those elements, which I think are kind of reasonable. So.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, Representative Huntley, or?
Well, I don't know if any of our staff would know, but on the Met Lab thing in the House, it's my guess is, and I've never studied this, but that the children would probably be taken away from the parents by the county mm-hmm. for child abuse and put in foster care, so they wouldn't even be in the same mm-hmm. system. Mm-hmm. So.
That's the dynamics, Representative Huntley. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Representative Liebling. I didn't know if Mr. Chairman, if you wanted to comment first. Okay, Representative Liebling.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just to that one, it is a 10-year, so it could have been 10 years ago. You're probably right, Representative Huntley. And I did check that, too, and I thought, yeah, that should belong in there, too. But, 10 years ago, so who knows. But the question I have is on line 19.21, which is this thing about vendor payment for basic needs. And I know we had some discussion about that, but I guess I'd like to know exactly what that is and how you vendor pay that, Representative Liebler.
Mr. Chairman.
Madam Chairman Liebling, I have no idea. It wasn't my bill. I know that Ms. Punelli, I think, knows the answer to that.
Okay,
no,
Mr.
She doesn't know either.
Okay.
Somebody knows the answer to this question.
Mr. Chairman, just give us a second here. It looks like we might be having some. Nope. Looks like they're gone now, Mr. Chairman.
Oh.
Maybe they'll hear us talking about it and somebody.
Comes another
hear.
Knowledgeable source.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
While she's coming, let me just say one more thing on the families with needs side. There's three programs we tried to fund last year. Circles of Support, Northern Connections, and what's the other one?
Healthy Communities.
Ms. Sullivan Sutton.
Healthy Communities. And those are funded with Hanif in the bill. So I think it's kind of a nice package. And I think I've got just a few minutes left, Madam Chair, and then I'll excuse myself. So these are questions that are general questions. Are there any more specific questions for me?
I think we look like we're good to go right now, Mr.
Okay.
Chairman.
Okay, I'll excuse myself and let the testifiers talk about that piece of the bill. And just so people, I don't know if I said this in my earlier comments, there'll be two amendments coming from me tomorrow. There's a technical amendment, which is from me. And then there's probably a pretty good size one that has a bunch of stuff that'll be mine. And then there'll be all the, I think I did that earlier. So if you're wondering who thought of it, who's carrying it, if it's the big one with multiple things, come talk to me. So thank you, Madam Chair and members. Right. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much,
thanks
Mr.
for the public
Chair.
For the help.
I appreciate that. And was there... Julie Ring, Ms. Ring, are you...
To address the question that was just asked, Madam Chair, and if I'm the knowledgeable source in the room, I think we're all in trouble. however, we created a bit of a stir around this piece when we read it because we don't know that we've seen this, so we're not sure where it's come from, but we know we talked about it a lot last year. Sorry, Julie Ring on behalf of the Association of Minnesota Counties. Because counties do have a great deal of concern about vendoring for this piece. It means vendoring, we would have to cut checks anytime people want to buy clothing, toothpaste, deodorant. So I don't know where it came from, but we'd be happy to talk to you more about it because we think it raises some concern.
Ms. Rain, just to clarify, legal aid is the source of this particular point of language that we know of at this time.
We'll connect with them.
All right. I welcome that. Okay. I think then we're on to our testifiers.
Yay!
To mention that we do have quite a list of testifiers. Ms. Angel Buckner, you are number one, if you come on down. And Deb Konecki. Ms. Buckner.
Yep, Angel, you're up.
Konecki, Ms. Konecki is on. And just to let all of you know that our testifiers have been informed that there is a strict four-minute presentation, and we do have a timekeeper, and ordinarily we'd do like 2 minutes maybe, but we're going to go to 4 minutes, but we will hold to that 4 minute. And I know it goes fast. All right. Ms. Buckner, you'd like to start off?
Sure. It's Buchner.
Buchner, so sorry.
That's fine. And I'm going to stick to that 4 minutes. So I would just like to address the committee that we are very content with some of the changes that were made in the bill pertaining to MFIP and EBT. And with that said, I'll just continue my spiel and I'll get out of your way. We are in an economic crisis, and while this bill does not cut from the demonize the poor as much as the earlier proposals, it is important to keep in mind that now is the time to be giving more to the poor. Because of the crisis, whatever safety net from family or friends we had has been eroded because now they are unemployed like us and losing their homes or already homeless. So while this proposal is an improvement, there are still some things in this bill that should be taken out. One is the useless section on not allowing the use of EBT card for alcohol and tobacco. This has already been the law for years. You keep passing the same thing over and over again, and this time you are spending $24,000 to do it. It is not logical. It is clearly an effort of a few here to ponder to prejudice that poor mothers are criminals. It is time to stop. We are against the part that says EBT cash can only be withdrawn in Minnesota and bordering states. Like we said in other testimony, this is an unconstitutional restriction on our right to travel. We have the right to visit family members in other states. Whether there is a funeral, they are on posted at a military base, or if they are in crisis. We have the right to seek opportunities of employment anywhere in the country. Again, this plays into stereotypes that have been proven untrue about families on welfare. Also, when you consider that well over half of the cash grant is federal money, this is section in a shaky legal ground. Finally, the program in this bill, the circles of support, healthy community initiatives, Northern Connection, and FAME sound great. So does fixing last year's child care blender. However, if you think of these things are as important, we recommend that you use general fund dollars to fund them and not TANF dollars. As we have always said, TANF money, especially in these hard economic times, should be going directly to TANF families. $1.2 million of the TANF is spent on circles of support and healthy community initiatives, Northern Connection and FAME, and buying back the child care absent days. While these are awesome programs, like I said, we see these programs might not address getting people out of poverty because they're pilot programs, and MFIP also started out as a pilot program, and then it eroded to just all kinds of poverty maintenance. So just take that in consideration. The TANF grants have not been increased since 1986, 26 years ago. A family of three gets $532 in cash per month. You cannot rent a studio apartment for that in the most of this state. Use TANF money to raise the grants rather than forcing families into desperate poverty and homelessness. These economic times call for serious action to help all low-income families raise the grants so that more of the newly unemployed don't have to get so far in the hole, they can get out. If this isn't enough TANF money to do that, then tell your colleagues to go where the money is. Tax the rich. Use the money to help people in Minnesota.
Thank you, Ms. Buechner.
Thank you.
Very good job in staying in your time. A nice way to start it off. Thank you very much for your comments. Representative Hosh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was just, I just had a question for you in regard to the vendor payment of the personal needs money. I don't see that the legal aid is on the testifiers list, but you did say it came from them. They're not here right now, but I hope you give them a chance to testify, because I just find that extremely hard to comprehend that, you know, we're going to vendor personal needs dollars.
Thank you, Representative Hosh. We'll certainly initiate that contact and
let them know they need to come and speak to language that they're supporting, if that's the case. All right, Ms. Kim DeFranco, and then also Ms. Wade, Darnella Wade, if you could come get ready.
Hi, my name is Kim DeFranco. I'm with the Minnesota Coalition for People's Bailout, and it is quite an impressive improvement, but we're still fundamentally against the bill because we need anti-poverty programs, not, you know, beating people down when they're at a low point anyways. But I was we were drawn to the evictions or the vendor payment for uninhabitable units, and it's great that you're not going to evict the people that live there, but right before that it says may not take an eviction action, which is line 21, 24, and 21. So it's a discussion that's always leading that they still can or not, whatever they decide. And it also puts up a conflict role between the tenants and the landlord. So that's something to take into consideration. With the drug convictions, we're totally against penalizing people that have passed drug convictions. We don't know why people get convicted. There's lots of reasons why people use substances. And instead of just, you know, saying you've got like three strikes, you're out, you got one strike, you're out, we go back 10 years, we need to have programs so people can get the help that they need. But also with that, if someone is convicted and they get penalized for it, even though that one family member is being penalized, you still have other family members that are affected. So no matter how much income is lowered, the rest of the family will be infected. So what we really need, and y'all should start working on this, is that we need anti-poverty programs. As Angel said, we have pilots, but pilots are just for groupings of people. And what we really need is an anti-poverty programs that help everyone, so we can all live a good life and be a contributing citizen to this country and the state. So that's all.
Thank you very much, Ms. DeFranco. Appreciate your taking the time to be here today. And just to let you know, is Darnella Wade here?
I'll give a little rap for her. She was excited.
I'm sorry, Ms. Buechner. Darnella Wade is not here.
Yeah, she went downstairs.
And what you are saying, Ms. Buechner, is that you just like to say a few words on her behalf? Is that?
Yeah, she wanted to address, it looks like you guys had decided to do some fixing with the PCA as far as being taken care of for your relatives and giving back that 20%. Mm-hmm. And she wanted to say, right on.
Okay. Well, very nice.
She's excited.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For being here today. And we have Ms. Ebony Harris next on the list. If you see your name is on the list, please, if you just come on down. Ms. DeFranco, are you another witness person here or testifier?
Sure. She couldn't make it today. She had to deal with family issues. But she's testified before on her situation, and it's a common situation when people are living below the poverty line. They're struggling. They actually do work, but it's very haphazard. It may be part-time work. You don't get benefits. So if something goes wrong with your car, you're fired. If you get sick or your children get sick. So there's lots of things that play into it. And so what we need to do, and she would agree, that we need jobs that pay living wages so you can actually survive on it and actually get your family where it needs to go. So we just have a common theme. You know, we just need jobs with livable wages, affordable housing, stopping the foreclosure crisis, and then we would probably see a better society.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, Ms. DeFranco. And I also like to mention, yes, Representative Liebling, did you have a question for the testifier,
well,
Ms. DeFranco?
Madam Chair, before, actually for the last one, but not so much a question, but just a comment about what she said, and mm-hmm. just real quickly before we move on.
Sure.
I don't think the PCA buyback is in this bill that she mentioned that they were happy about, and I just maybe staff could inform me if I'm wrong, but I don't think it's in here.
I will clarify that, Representative Liebling, as to what she was making reference here.
Tina, it's already in the it's already in the forecast.
Is Linda Gaboy here? Sorry if I might have messed up on that name, Ms. Gaboy, or Lyndon Gaboy.
She's not here, and I won't take up any more time.
Okay, Mr. Franco. All right. Very nice. Okay. Dr. Alice Halbert. And Dr. Zuspan, you can please come down and join Dr. Halbert. Is Mr. Lindblom with you as well?
Yes.
Do you want to come together, the three of you? Yeah. Or
that would be great. Thank you.
All right. And I believe there's still a 4 minutes for each of you, but I know you're kind of on the same subject, and it might be helpful to use your time together.
Yes, thank you. I'm Alice Halbert. Thank you for inviting us all to testify today. This is a very interesting process. There are a lot of things in the bill that I really appreciate. I'm glad that the force bed closure is not there anymore. That is a very nice step forward. The autism license settings, that is going to be a great addition to the things that we are moving forward on. I hope that everybody sees the value in licensing, and we try to continue to apply licensed care to all people who need, who have special needs and need a higher level and understanding of their medical conditions. I don't want to see licensing just get washed away as we go forward with looking at new models. I also encourage everybody to keep pushing to get the 1.67% cut modified. That's a nice step forward, too. I look forward to seeing these amendments as they come, and I hope that everybody keeps in mind that when we're talking about stakeholders and moving on with forming new approaches and processes, that we remember that families need to be a part of the process as we add our stakeholder lists. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Halbert. Okay. Dr. Zuspan?
Hello, and thank you for allowing me to speak and actually have a good amount of time. I appreciate that.
Yes, and Dr. You're bad. I'm glad to have you here. Dr. Zuspan, would you just also for the tape record, it's always really important because they can't see you on the tape.
I'm sorry?
Please state your name and before you testify.
My name is Catherine Zuspan. I am not a parent of a disabled child, but I am a physician and I can speak from that aspect. And I have friends and neighbors with disabled children in need of group homes, so I know that aspect as well. I wanted to talk specifically about the continuing care section 2 area about licensing, the licensing moratorium. And I have some concerns about the changes that are noted. One that requires DHS to decrease statewide capacity if necessary to maintain long-term care resident service capacity within budget limits. And I think that sounds admirable, but we're decreasing capacity to fit the budget. We're not decreasing capacity to fit the need. And I think we have to realize that by continuing to decrease capacity to fit our budget, we have a ballooning capacity of people in need that is growing. And right now, again, there are 4,000 people on the waiting list for a group home or a placement of some kind. And this list is growing. And as I testified the other day, modern medicine is keeping, is allowing babies to survive. Disabled children are growing into adulthood, and we are going to need to address this problem. And the things that have been put forward in this section ignore the problem. I'd also like to mention the area that requires consolidation of services. This means apartments and five-person group homes. 2 minutes. Oh, thank you.
Good find, Dr. Zuspan.
Thank you. The closure of adult adult foster care homes if not viable. But we're basing that viability on whose decision making. Is it on the providers or is it on the needs of the people? And again, we have to remember that these disabled people are not just pawns to be shuffled around based on our economics. They are human beings and they are citizens of our state. Again, the processes that are in this section take into consideration the state's budget and the needs of the providers. And I realize they do need to make a profit to stay in business. However, we do need to take into consideration the needs of the residents and the needs of their families who know these residents better than anyone. Remember that the families and the residents are stakeholders in this, and they need to be included in the discussions. I just want to conclude by saying that this disabled community is growing, and we have to remember that and include that in our equation for success. Instead of ignoring the needs of this group of people and decreasing the quality of care, which is really what we're doing with a lot of these steps to save money, we're really just cutting care more and more. We need to look at what are the real solutions to these problems. I have 30 seconds. We can't ignore these problems. They're going to get worse, and this giant balloon of people is going to get bigger. So I suggest we not go forward with Section 2, that we sit down all the stakeholders at the table and really come to some real conclusions. Thank you.
Dr. Zuspan, I really appreciate your being here, and especially for those who are here all the time, those who come on this kind of a special basis and you're not totally familiar. I just wanted to make sure, though, because we have a DE2 amendment from the bill before, and so you may not be as familiar. I think when you were testifying, as we were following along, I think you'll be very encouraged to know. I think that your previous testimony had an impact and that the DE2 amendment already has incorporated some of those things that you've talked about today. But if you want to see that firsthand for yourself, there are copies of the DE2 amendment, and Paige can get a copy for you.
Wonderful.
So that you can take a look at that.
You and guys do things so last minute, you can't stay up with it.
It is very challenging, Dr. Zuspan. I have great sympathy for that, and that's why I thought I would just...
I'm an anesthesiologist, and medicine doesn't go that fast.
Well,
faster than a heartbeat.
Well, Dr. Zuspan, you can usually put him to sleep for a while, and then, you know... A little different. We got everybody here wide awake.
I'm in obstetrics. I do epidurals. Thanks.
Thank you, and God bless you. Many people say God bless you, right? Thank you for your good work. Thank you. All right, Mr. Lindblom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Wayne Lindholm, and I testify today as a parent of a child with a developmental disability living in a corporate foster care home. As a parent advocate, I want to thank this committee, the Department of Human Services, and ARM for working to find new ways to address the residential needs of the most vulnerable residents of our state, especially given the fiscal realities before us. The awful choices we have reminds me of a baseball player's instructions when giving directions to his home. You drive till you get to the fork of the road, then take it. Nobody likes the thought of horrific unintended consequences that could come from taking the wrong turn at this fork in the road. As a parent, I like to try to put a face on this fiscal challenge. Our children and other vulnerable adults are often in the circumstances through no fault of their own, sometimes only by being born into this world. As other more able adults brainstorm and ultimately create legislation to help this group of citizens, we need to keep a face on them. To this end, I appreciate the removal of assistive technology from this bill, even though it was technology cloaked in the admirable desire of more freedom and independence for the vulnerable person. But like the fork in the road that Yogi referred to, every coin has two sides to it. Assistive technology in the pursuit of freedom and independence has been used with some success with other support programs. Prison programs use GPS ankle bracelet technology, and pet owners use GPS tracking collars. Please do not confuse these technology success stories for applications with our most vulnerable residents of the state. They are people first. Thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lindholm. Mr. Lindholm, and Representative Huntley, I will Okay, thank you very much. One of the things I'd like to mention in regards to this, because I remember there was a time when it was presumptively institutional care and nursing homes. And since then, along the way, we've changed in a very people-centered, positive way. And I would suspect that because of the things that we have learned, whether it's assisted living and just so many things that are out there, but every time you push a little bit, I think it's always important to remember that at the center are the people, and you've reminded us of that. And thank you for your testimony today. And Representative Huntley, did you have a...
I just had a comment from Mr. Lindholm, who quoted a Yogi Berra. I'll give you another one that applies to this. If you don't know where you're going, you may end up someplace else.
Thank you.
We could maybe start a list, Representative Huntley, all those...
thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lindholm. Okay. All right. Wonderful. Ms. Webster is here today, and in answer to your question, Representative Hosh, she is here today to address that. So if you would, again, for the tape record, just state your name and proceed.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, my name is Jessica Webster. I'm a staff attorney with Legal Aid, and I have worked with Representative Dowd a little bit on this vendoring language, so I'm happy to answer questions or clarify if there was any confusion about how it's drafted.
Representative Hosh?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Ms. Webster. Just out of the logistics of being, you know, vendoring personal needs. I mean, it's $87. I mean, one of my consumers, just used it to buy some underwear. I mean, geez. I mean, are we going to have the county cut checks for every little thing? Is this something that Legal Aid supports and thinks would be beneficial to those who will get personal needs dollars?
Ms. Webster.
Madam Chair, Representative Hosh, so I'm not exactly sure when you're talking about personal needs allowance. So right now, under current law, we can vendor the MFIT cash benefit for utilities and for shelter. Representative Dowd's intent when he was pushed last session and also asked by advocates this session, what about child care payments? What about diapers? I don't think we got down to the level of toothpaste, but there were a number of things, and Representative Dowd said his intent was never to have someone not have access to their grant for some very basic needs if their grant didn't go to cover shelter and utilities. And I think that when you take a step back from vendoring and understand that right now some counties are vendoring, you have a very small grant, so most people are using their entire grant for their housing. However, we may have someone who is renting a room or is only using half of their grant for their housing, and they may have some money left over in their grant. And we just want to make sure that they're not limited to a utility payment, or they have to give the landlord their entire amount of their cash grant if their rent is only $200. Does that make sense?
Thank you, Ms. Webster. Representative Hosh, want to follow up?
Okay, Madam Chair, and this is the language that I'm referring to. It's on page 19, line 20. It says, benefits for the assistance unit may be paid in vendor form for shelter, utilities, and basic needs. So what I take that as is, you know, the $87 personal needs check that many of the people that I work with get. If they have a previous conviction, will have to be vendored out. Am I misunderstanding how that section? Section 13.
Madam Chair, Representative Hosh, I may be misunderstanding your question, but so in 256J, we're talking about your MFIP transitional cash grant, correct? The personal needs allowance, the $87 personal needs allowance, I'm not entirely sure how
Ms.
that fits in here.
Yeah, okay. Ms. Webster, do you have a copy of the DE2 amendment in front of you? Right?
Madam Chair, it is in front of me, but the cash grant, the MFIP cash grant is different from the personal needs allowance that Representative Hosh is speaking of.
Madam Chair, Ms. Webster, that helps quite a bit. I was thinking this said must be done. I guess I was referring to basic needs as the personal needs allowance too, and that would have been very, very problematic.
Right. Representative Hosh, thank you for bringing it up so that we can get this clarified.
Yes.
And appreciate folks who help respond and bring. Ms. Webster, do you have additional information?
Madam Chair, Representative Hosh, just to clarify one more time, this isn't the personal needs allowance, this is our MFIP cash grant. And I think that this language, basic needs, I mean, is critically important to a number of people. And then I think when we also look at vendoring, we're talking, in this section of the law, we're talking about people with felony-level drug offenses, and we're talking about 87 counties. So I don't think we're talking about a crush of thousands of people going to the county to ask for $2 vendor checks for toothpaste, if that answers your question.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Webster. Representative Hosh? Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
okay, helps. Very good. Thank you. Representative Liebling?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I had originally raised this when Representative Abler was up here, and I'm still confused, quite apart from the allowance that Representative Hosh was talking about. I don't even know how that plays in here at all. But my concern was, and it was mentioned that this was language that came from your organization in some way, and I'm not understanding how. I mean, what we're doing here is we're saying that when somebody has a felony-level drug offense and they're on MFIP, that now in addition to, it says, already current law says that the benefits for the entire assistance unit must be paid in vendor form for shelter and utilities. And now we're adding to that and basic needs. So my question is, how do you vendor pay the basic needs? And what in fact is that? And how do you vendor pay that? Because it just seems a little, I don't know what the logistics are. I don't know if it's, you know, economically makes sense to do that, or how does that work? Can you just give me a little, what are we talking about there?
Representative Liebling, Mr. Duguid is here, Mr. Duguid, sorry, and we've been informed that he might be a better person at this time. That Ms. Webster, you're welcome to weigh in on this, but I'm just trying to help get you the information. And before we, Well,
Madam Chair, you had said that it came from legal aid, and so I was... That, I guess, is a question.
Representative Liebling, you're asking two questions, and I'm trying to address. One of your questions was the how. The other question was the source. And just to clarify, I think that this might be helpful. Representative Dowd had language. What legal aid has done is said, if you're going to have that language, then this basic needs is an important issue to include in that language. But I think it may be help clarify that this is Representative Dowd's bill or portion of a bill or his amendment, something like that. And all that legal aid is doing here is they want the basic needs into that language of Representative Dowd. Ms. Webster, does that help clarify your position in regards to this language?
Madam
and
Chair,
then we'll get to the how question.
Madam Chair and Representative Liebling, I think that's an accurate representation of legal aid's position. Legal aid would be happy to clarify in statute all the things that we think count as basic needs, but what we wanted to do was probably give some discretion to the counties and give some discretion to DHS and how they would implement this.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Webster. Representative Liebling, the other question was how the vendor works.
Right, well, exactly, Madam
yes,
Chair.
Yes, and that is, we have Mr. Duguid here right, to address and that right. question, Representative Liebling.
Right, and just on the last answer, you know, the this says must be paid.
Representative Liebling, so. Do you want to restate your question for Mr. Duguid so that he can address it, or do you feel that you've given that?
Well, Madam Chair, I don't know if he needs me to restate it. I apparently not, so let him go ahead and answer.
All right, that's what you'd like to do. Mr. Duguid.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mark Duguid from the Department of Human Services. As I understand the intent here, it is to make sure that people have an ability to buy diapers and pay for child care, their co-pay for child care assistance and so forth. And so certainly we support that intent. We share the county's concerns, though, about the impact and that this could be a significant burden. It's mm-hmm. it's already fairly onerous to vendor pay the utilities and the rent. There's a lot of paperwork, a lot of changes. People move a lot. And so I guess in the spirit of simplification and reduction of burdens and demands on counties, we would share the county's concerns but want to support sort of the good intent of legal aid and trying to get something for basic needs.
Thank you, Mr. Duguid. Representative Liebling?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. So what I'm kind of understanding here, correct me if I'm wrong, is that the use of the term basic needs is even though the language in current law in adding this says that it must be paid in vendor form, that the use of the term basic needs is meant to give flexibility about what that is.
Mr. Tugut.
Madam Chair, a representative leaving. That's correct. That's my understanding as well. So there may be a small amount of money left over after the shelter and utilities costs have been addressed, not, as I think Jessica was saying. Not that many people are going to have a lot of money left over after those two major costs have been vendor paid, but to the extent there is money left over, they should be able to use it to pay for child care assistance and be able to get to work, a bus card to get to work and whatnot. It's just the implementation of vendor paying small amounts to a bunch of different sort of spots obviously would be fairly onerous.
Thank you, Mr. Tugut. It sounds to me like you are trying to maximize the benefit to folks who have needs. Representative Liebling?
Well,
I also have another.
Okay, well, thank you, Madam Chair.
Prince will be next.
Thank you for indulging this. I do think it's really pretty important, even though it's just a couple of words or three words here. And, you know, I get the intent. Maybe we're all on the same page with the intent. I'm just wondering if this language actually does, you know, this says must be paid, you know, for basic needs must be paid in vendor form. And I don't know, you know, if that gives count, if everybody believes that that gives flexibility to only pay in vendor form things that are reasonably handled that way, that's fine. But I hope that that's what this language mm-hmm. does.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. Mr. Tugut, I appreciate your being here today. Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Fritz, do you have a question for the testifier?
Actually, this is to this point, Madam Chair,
all right.
And I just want to raise this and ask the gentleman here, Mr. Tugut. As legislators, we go home and we hear from our county finance workers and those folks that are already overwhelmed with work, and for them now, if I hear from my county commissioners that we have imposed another mandate or a piece of work to them to vendor out a couple of bucks for some you know, toothpaste and that kind of thing, can you give me assurances that's what's written in this bill and the way that it is written is that is not going to happen?
Mr. Tugut, I think that's, I don't know, Representative Fritz, if people can issue guarantees here as a, would you like to address the...
Well, Madam Chair, I share the concerns of Representative Fritz, mm-hmm. And I think we're very sensitive right now to any more demands on the counties. Mm-hmm. So we share those concerns.
Thank you.
And Mr. Tugut, I get the impression that this, and from Ms. Jessica, let's see, sorry. Webster, Ms. Webster, that it doesn't look like this is a large number in any case, and that according to this section, it is vendor payments. That's the way it is. That's the section of law that applies to these people. So thank you for being here today and giving us that information. Appreciate it very much. All right. Ms. Abderhalden, you're our next testifier.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
And Ms. Henry, if you might come also.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Sue Abderhalden on behalf of NAMI Minnesota. On behalf of children and adults with mental illnesses and their families, I'd like to offer a few comments on the bill. I believe I actually have more to say on what is not in the bill than what is in the bill. First, I want to let members know that, as you know, NAMI had concerns with the physician assistant bill, and I want to inform you that the language in the bill is a compromise agreed to by the mental health community. NAMI supports the pediatric care coordination for children with serious illnesses, including mental illnesses. I have taken three calls at night within the past week from moms whose children have very, very serious mental illnesses. They don't believe they can keep them safe in their home, and they simply cannot access the care coordination and services that they so desperately need. We also support expanding the long-term care report in terms of who you're involving in there. But often, again, when people say the disability community, mental health is not included, and so it might be nice just to throw that word in there so that we are also involved in those discussions. Coming into the session, NAMI only had a few priorities, and all of them are not included in the bill. Our top priority was no more cuts to the mental health system, so thank you for not including any in your bill. Our second priority was reducing the 10% cut to low needs individuals on the CADI waiver, many of whom live with a mental illness, since the assessment tool doesn't adequately capture symptoms of mental illness. I don't really think that creating a higher density of people with disabilities in one building will really create enough savings to save some of our programs. We are glad that the providers will be involved in the CADI assessments. We think that might help address some of the issue. But I want to remind you that the nursing facility level of care that is, you know, on its way to the federal government for approval will actually result in many children and adults with mental illnesses being no longer eligible for the CADI program. Our third priority was to address the closure of corporate foster care beds. So someone moves out and the bed closes without regard to quality, geography, or population served. I don't believe that the language in the bill really addresses this. It just kind of kicks it up to a statewide number. And I don't think there's a person in this building who would believe that we have enough housing for people who have a serious mental illness. And if people move out of a higher cost setting like a hospital, an IRG, or a NOCA, and move into a foster care home with mental health expertise, people can recover and then move out into a less restrictive, less costly setting. Decreasing beds without real criteria, I don't think, is good public policy. Our fourth priority was creating the voluntary certification process where people demonstrate they have expertise in mental health, and I believe that maybe we'll see that taken care of tomorrow, and so then I'll smile at that. In sum, we're grateful that there aren't more cuts, but we wish that some of these major issues impacting the mental health community have been addressed. I think that with the convergence of the nursing facility level of care, the 10% low needs cut, and the bed closures, it just really underscores the need why we need to have a waiver that is specifically for people with a mental illness. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much, Ms. Abderholden. Thank you. Just like to mention, Ms. Henry, you'll be the last testifier for today, so I just thought I'd let know the other testifiers will continue tomorrow, and then once Ms. Henry testifies, then I'll give you some other information for you on what's going to be happening next. So thank you, Ms. Henry, if you want to go right ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Ann Henry, and I'm with the Disability Law Center. Time doesn't permit all the items I'd like to mention, so I'll just mention a few that we support, some that we have serious concerns with, and then two items that aren't in the bill, and I'll just say those quickly. We're really worried about the 20% PCA relative cut, very disappointed it's not here, and also the issue that Ms. Abderholden just mentioned on the 10% congregate rate cut and the bad effect it's had on our clients with mental illness. In terms of what we support, we are working hard on that need determination language that is bound up in trying to get a voluntary process for the department to use to solicit ideas from providers to change the services they have and use those changes instead of the bed closures. And we've been working a lot with the Department of Human Services. They believe this is possible. They're doing it now. So we're very hopeful that we won't have this random bed closure provision that we saw at the end of the shutdown last year. We also are pleased that that does have a stakeholder process, and I think the idea of specifically adding, including people with mental illness to that process is a good idea. Second, we're very supportive of the changes to medical assistance for employed persons with disabilities to allow them to work after age 65 and keep their resources. Hooray. We are also supportive of Section 18 on page 48, which is the community first choice option language, something we worked on last year and we think will be included in the department's MA reform waiver, at least in some form. Also, I just quickly mentioned the provisions on autism, the epilepsy program, self-advocacy, and dealing with the 1.67% rate cut. Now for the concern, my biggest concern is the language on PCA appeals, page 30.3, section 4, and 34.227. We are concerned that in the end, the changes will restrict people's basic due process rights by requiring that recipients have to specify in writing what they want to appeal. I can tell you a lot of people can't understand their assessments. I know that Representative Abler, it wants them to get clear language, but it's still pretty complicated, and we're very worried about this. Our proposal instead would be to remove these two sections and come back next year, actually have a hearing on this, and figure out what would make a difference. We also still have some issues on size and hope that some of those will be dealt with in amendments tomorrow. And finally, I would just say that there is a good provision in here on critical access for the elderly waiver. We would like to see that expanded to people of all ages and included in this big need determination process. I think we need to look across everybody and where they need to access services. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Henry. You did a wonderful job there. I know it is always a tight time frame. Always appreciate that very much. And with that, members, we are... Representative
Huntley. Yeah, sorry. I would, not today, but there's been some discussion of the 20% cut to family PCA. Mm-hmm. And if the staff could explain to us tomorrow.
Okay, thank you.
Where the, it's... Is it in the budget, in the forecast, or isn't it? And when does it terminate and all that? That's not clear to me.
Thank you, Representative Huntley. We will definitely take care of that. Representative Gutwalk, you might have.
Just real quickly, Madam Chair, I think we have a bipartisan agreement on that. I think the intent is to remove that. I know that it is in the forecast for this year.
Yep.
The question going forward is the language going to be stricken, and are we going to take care of it going forward? And I think we share the goal of doing that.
Okay, thank you very much, members. Just to let you know, whoever did not get to testify today, you will be carried over to tomorrow. You don't need to call or sign up again. We'll take care of that. 12:30 tomorrow, and then we're going to finish testimony. And once that's done, the committee will take action on the bill, but first, amendments and discussion, of course. And then we'll recess at 2:15 to go to the floor. And once the business of the floor is concluded tomorrow, then we'll reconvene 30 minutes after session adjourns, and then we'll complete work on the bill. All right. All right. With that, members, we are adjourned.